And good morning. Good morning to you. You are listening to Heart of Mind Radio, and this is the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis, your host, and we come to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. And our goal is to provide you with hopefully some inspiration and perhaps insight into the world, insight into the state of our existence, insight into making our lives just a little bit better. And one of the ways we do this is to share audio clips of inspirational information. And during our second segment today, we're going to be doing just that. I'm going to be sharing with you a talk by actually the late Stephen R. Covey on the Living a Principled, Centered Life. So I want you to stay tuned for that. I think it's going to be very interesting. I very much enjoyed this talk. It was actually given to a freshman class, I think, at a university. But it is so relevant to all of our lives, I would say. And I want you to stay tuned for that. But in our first segment, I wanted to share a little of my own work with you, a little of my own writing, as well as some thoughts about the state of our lives. I think it's very important for us to find a way to progress and to ensure that we are living the best life that we absolutely can. And it's certainly what I endeavor to do in my own life. And so I am actually working on a book, a manuscript for a book, and I was working on it most, I would say, through the night, putting it together. And when I get that spark of inspiration, and I'm sure many of you are like this, when you get that spark of inspiration, you can just go full tilt without being distracted, without feeling tired, without feeling overworked or overwhelmed. And that's really the beauty of inspiration, because there is an energy to it that fuels your movement, that fuels your thinking, and really opens up in a way that it offers a paved road ahead of you, whatever it is that you want to do in your life, whether it's writing a book or writing a song or a piece of music, or preparing for a performance, having a performance of some kind in the theater, or if it's even that you're so inspired by your work that you go to work and really enjoy that work and you feel motivated to do what you're doing throughout the day. Inspiration is a beautiful thing, and when it lights on your shoulder, it's a little bit, for me, like a butterfly. It lights on your shoulder and you just enjoy it when it arrives and travel down that path as far as it will take you. And I think it's important also to be disciplined in one's work and move through it in an organized way. But when inspiration hits, then that's really a really wonderful, wonderful thing about it. And basically, I started working on a project. Well, I guess one could consider one's life a project, but I've been working on a project called Life in the Age of Now. Life in the Age of Now. And I'm quite excited about it because it's helping me to put order to some of my thoughts, as well as some of the information that I've accumulated as well as a lot of insights that I have received from through inspiration, different journal writings, different radio programs in which I'm speaking in a bit of free form, or when I've been directly inspired by higher guidance, is really the purest form that I have experienced. But I'm working on this project, and it is called, as I said, Living in the Age of Now, and being from the center of existence is really the tagline to the project. And what I'm really looking at is how we can stay connected to that fountain of being. And I say fountain of being because our existence really flows from our center and flows from our core into our world, into our bodies, into our experiences. And maintaining that connection to the core of our being is not always the easiest thing to do in the world in which we live. So in this project, being from the center of existence, so far I've worked in a couple of subtitles. One is Two-Dimensional Life in a 3D World, The Beauty of Third-Dimensional Life, Lost and Found in Space-Time, Life in the Age of Now, and Quantum. So it's a process of moving from conventional living, conventional understanding and interpretation of reality, and moving through into a fifth-dimensional understanding and expression of reality. So I won't share too much with you today, but I'll just share a few of the paragraphs under the first title, Two-Dimensional Life in a 3D World. Our lives have become like a vector drawing in that our being is determined from the position of one point in space in relation to another. As the points shift, so do our beings. What does this really say about our conventional reality? We have been trained since birth to live according to points of information, belief, and in some cases, scientific evidence that our lives are governed from without, outside of ourselves. Our brains have become finely tuned instruments, purposed towards gathering and accumulating information from outside of our being to determine our innate value. In such a condition, we become like chameleons, ever changing ourselves according to vectors of mass consciousness and systemic control. We contort our bodies and our values according to these vectors. Our mind does not belong to us. It rather becomes the keeper of a creature in the cage of life. Central to this limited existence is the directive to maintain distrust in oneself. Instinctual perception is shamed into submission, devaluing true feelings, which suppression of gives rise to the distorted effects of emotional confusion, a confusion engendered by the mind, ever vigilant to control its paper-thin reality. We live as cartoons on the storyboard of life, without depth or substance. As there is no real mechanism of control, we find a perceived safety in self-control. As this offers no true safety, we endeavor to control the beings in our lives, keeping them subservient and compliant according to our individual need to confirm the efficacy of our existence. All the while, building our lives and pursuits according to the original vectors upon which we as a society have been indoctrinated. These vectors flow through religion, anti-religion, and New Age religion. Religion being that which purports to be from God, or from science, or from politics, or from money. Religion being that which we cling to, have faith in, and worship. Many of us dream of fifth dimensional reality, but as a collective, we have yet to master the domain to which we are born. We have yet to liberate the human collective from the enslavement of mind. And this we must do in order to master the fullness of our being. And so that's the end of my quote for this morning. And really, what I am examining for myself is how my life is or has been really limited, very shallow in the world we're living in based on those things that I were taught and those things that for many years of my life really controlled my existence, living according to the rules of religion, living according to the rules of family and parents and lineage, ancestors perhaps. Living according to the rules of our society and living according to the rules of abundance in the sense of monetary wealth. And very often we live our lives out according to these rules because we might consider that our value is based on how well we can follow these concepts that have been really ingrained in us, programmed into us, and are reinforced by society. And when we say reinforced by society, how does that happen? How is it delivered? It's really because we as individuals have learned to be our own jailers, to control our own thinking, to control our own mind, to control our own actions. And we do that based on the fears of being judged and denied and criticized by our peers and those people who may have some influence over our survival. And also, and more powerfully though, we do it to each other. When we judge someone who has a different ideology or a different idea or a different way of being in the world. And so, as a person who has always been just a little bit off center, I have found that myself experiencing this judgment from people in the world, from family members, from colleagues, from people who would feel competitive for anything that I might do or be. And it's always a way of trying to undermine your confidence or undermine your perception, undermine your right to make choices for yourself in the world. And more important, it's important to recognize when this happens to us, but it's also important to recognize when we might be doing it to another human being, so that we can be in free, begin to break free of these old ingrained guidelines that cause us to live our life according to outside values, outside considerations. Though we're living in an outside world, I mean, we interact with each other in the world, but the real power is not found in that outer interaction. The real power of our beings to be able to manifest a life that we dream of and are calling to ourselves, we have to reach inward to the inner inspiration of our being. And part of that journey that I'm exploring in this manuscript to get to that life in the age of now, to that quantum level of experience, we must go through the third dimensional experience and clear it up, clean it up, remove the old blocks and obstacles that are embedded in our psyche, that are embedded in our physical body energetically. And the reason we want to remove this is because it keeps our mind and our behaviors locked in a loop of behaviors that we can think of as addictions, addictive behaviors. But an addictive behavior could also be not just consuming a substance, but an addictive behavior can also be self-criticism, self-denial, self-judgment. So it really is important that as we move and transition into a broader expression of being, that we come to know who we are in the third dimensional world. And when we can become free of some of these older obstacles, programming, and addictions, then we can sink into the beauty of the life that we have, the expression of our body, the expression of our true feelings, the capacity to be able to feel great magnitudes of gentleness and joy and companionship and camaraderie and the beauty of the natural world and the sustaining energy that flows through it. And as we come into full appreciation of the world in which we live, then we can move beyond that into that space that goes beyond time, that goes beyond the limitation of third dimensions. And we can begin to move through the quantum level of expression to manifest, to create, and to transform. We're going to take an early break today and listen to a couple of announcements. And then I'll come back with this very powerful talk that that you, I think, will benefit from. I enjoyed it immensely. Stephen R. Covey on Living a Principled-Centered Life. And he is the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment. I'll introduce the full segment after we take this brief break.
I don't know. I hear them in the music on my radio. Wisdom of the winds, faces in the clouds, rhythm of the rains, oh mountain standing proud. They prepare me for a special place. Encourage me to do my best everywhere I go, and everything I see flying in the air, speaking truth through me. I am a curious spirit child who fell to earth through a crack of lightning, but God, so kind and merciful, sent old souls to guide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio, and this is the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Catherine Davis. And Just before going into our next segment, I wanted to remind you that you can be in touch with me, Catherine, either by email at heartofmindradio@gmail.com or by phone to 347-480-1694. That's 347-480-1694. And for those of you who would like to explore more this whole process of releasing and letting go, dissolving those blocks in your body, in your energy, in your life, please do contact me by one of those means. Coming up, we're going to be listening to a presentation, and it's called Living a Principled, Centered Life by Stephen R. Covey. It was actually recorded in 2008. Dr. Stephen Covey has since transitioned, but he was the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And he gives this astounding address at Montana State University on living a principally centered life. He explains how those who live without principles tend to evaluate themselves according to what others think. He also encourages the incoming freshmen he is addressing not to cram their studies in order to just get by in college, as that is a bad habit that Covey confesses he had, which robbed him of much of the value of his early college education. And from my perspective, even though he's saying this to these young college freshmen, in a way, it's a message that we can all benefit from, because every new day we start fresh, every new year we start fresh. And we're living in a time in which we are being encouraged to reinvent ourselves, to find a way to live in a world with full expression and in peace. So let's go to this talk. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And we'll be back at the back end. So stay tuned for Stephen R. Covey.
It's a dark and stormy night. Captain, wake up. Oh, what is it? We're sorry to waken you, sir, but we have a serious problem. What is it? There's a ship in our sea lane about 20 miles away, and they refuse to move. What do you mean they refuse to move? Tell them to move. We have, sir. They won't move. I'll tell them. Signal goes out. Move starboard 20 degrees. The signal returns. Move starboard yourself 20 degrees. Who is this joker? I mean, how arrogant. Let him know who I am. Signal goes out. This is Captain Horatio Hornblower, the 26th, commanding you to move starboard 20 degrees. At once. Signal returns. This is Seaman Carl Jones, the 3rd, commanding you to move starboard 20 degrees at once. I mean, we're a battleship. We could just blow them right out of the, let them know who we are. Signal goes out. This is the SS Missouri, flagship of the 7th Fleet. Again, move starboard 20 degrees at once or else. Signal returns. This is the lighthouse. That's a true story, by the way. It's found in the Naval Proceedings Manual, where they literally interpreted a lighthouse as a ship. But I like that story, because I believe that there are lighthouse principles that never change, that are universal and timeless. I have taught them all over the world in every kind of culture with different political, religious, historical approaches. For a second, everyone close your eyes, if you would, without any peeking. Everyone point, don't keep your eyes closed. Now point north. Okay, now open your eyes and look around. See where people are pointing. I see most of the faculty are pointing in this direction, but I sense that many of the students are pointing all over the place, including straight up. Here is a compass. This way's north. How many had it? How many blew it? How many blew it badly? The point is that it's a magnetic, natural power in the world that guides this compass. My central message tonight is live your life by a compass, not by a clock. You will still use a clock, but within the larger context of a compass, where you have a clear sense of vision and purpose for the future, direction, and also a set of principle-based values that you live by and that you develop integrity. You are integrated through them. For instance, how many of you in high school did a lot of cramming? How many got pretty good at it? How many saw a lot of other people doing it? How many have ever worked on a farm? Ever cram on the farm? You know, forget the plant in the spring, flake off all summer, then hit it real hard in the fall to bring in the harvest. You see, the law of the harvest is a natural law. It is what we might call a principle. True north. I would encourage you to make your mind up at the beginning of this school year to cultivate a steady habit of consistent study and avoid the tendency to cram. That tendency may be deeply embedded in you because of past cramming, but you will end up regretting it, as I did. I not only crammed in some of my high school, but throughout my entire college, and I ended up regretting it. So when I worked on my doctoral program, I made an effort to get the equivalent of another undergraduate degree. Because I realized I had cultivated a habit and it was hollow and empty, like cramming on a farm. You ever tried to cram in the building of a strong relationship of high trust? You can't do it. If you're duplicitous or hypocritical, if you make commitments and don't keep them, if you're unkind, if you badmouth people behind their back, people will know that you are not principle-centered. And you will find that little by little, you will lose trust. You will lose the essence of true leadership, which is moral authority. Gandhi was the father of the largest democracy in the world and never held a position. Leadership is not formal authority. It is moral authority. It comes from deep integrity combined with competence. I had a great personal visit with Nelson Mandela just a short while ago. He was the first president of the new South Africa. He earned his moral authority in prison, Robben Island Prison, over a period of 26 years. Colin Powell, who was the Secretary of State at one time, said that one of the most electrifying and inspiring experiences of his entire life was to go to Nelson Mandela's inauguration. He comes down the front aisle. There on the left-hand side, on the front row, are his loved ones. On the right-hand side were his jailers, called warders, many of whom had tortured him. I asked him, how long did it take to learn to make reconciliation and to forgive those people? He said, about 4 years. Why? I saw how they talked to each other. I came to realize that they had some goodness in them and that they too were victims of this apartheid system. So that's why he appointed Bishop Tutu, the chairman of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, to bring together the victims and the victimizers so that they could process their experiences and learn to forgive and to make reconciliation. President de Klerk, who was the president of the country of South Africa, also had deep conscience problems about apartheid. Even though his party, under the leadership of Botha, continued to maintain the apartheid system. But it was a conscience issue to him. And he opened up the way for Nelson Mandela and other political prisoners to become free and to become open to the process of the political process. And eventually Nelson Mandela became the new president of the new South Africa. If you don't build your life on principles, on character principles that are universal and timeless, you'll get your sense of self from being compared to other people. And that is the great identity theft. It's not when someone takes your wallet and uses your social security number and your credit cards. The true deep identity theft is the cultural DNA, where you begin to define yourself based on how you stack up to other people. And then what the student body president mentioned today, you will begin to lose a sense of self. You'll be defined externally, not within yourself. My cultural DNA was to become the one who would take over our family business. We had many businesses in gas and oil, hotels, motels, and so forth. But I had an experience that was so profound where I was doing volunteer work, and the leader of that volunteer effort asked me to train other leaders. It seemed so far distant and out of my comfort zone and ability and interest that I demurred. But he said to me, I see that you have the ability to do this. I will help you. You don't have to be a great font of wisdom. You just bring people together to get them to share best practices with each other and to learn to collaborate and to become creative with each other.
He helped me, and I found my voice. And I remember saying to my father, who had sent me to the Harvard Business School in preparation to take over the business, I would rather be a teacher. He himself said in response, I never found my voice in business either. He was good at business, but his main motive, desire, purpose, and voice was the development of interdisciplinary visitor centers to show how all truth is encompassed into one great whole. He worked on this for 20, 25 years in his basement. And it wasn't until his funeral when one of the speakers talked about his primary passion and love and the impact it had in the development of visitor centers. You have unique talents and gifts, and that is not often defined by the social mirror. When man found the mirror, he began to lose his soul. The point is, he became more concerned with his image than with his self. That is why when you read, many of you, the Seven Habits book this summer, you discovered the four unique human gifts or endowments that we all have that animals do not have. Self-awareness, imagination, conscience, and independent will. And when people use all four, they become the creative force of their own life. They then can decide what their life is about and develop a value system based upon these universal and timeless principles, these true north principles, like the law of the harvest, and being true to people, and being respectful and kind and honest, and to give service, that little by little, these things become gradually inculcated into your nature, and they become part of the influence that you have with other people. I wished I had learned this earlier. I am so glad that you have the opportunity to come to a great university in a beautiful setting, a university that is dedicated to research and to the dissemination of knowledge, and one where you can develop close relationships with your professors and with each other, and learn the collaborative processes of life, to learn to synergize. Synergy means that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It also is a principle. Most people only learn to compromise or to think always win, lose, or if they're martyr types, to think lose, win. I belong to what's called a World Leadership Summit Forum, made up of people from all around the world representing Jewish, Christian, and Islamic cultures, the purpose of which is to develop a better relationship between our country and the world Arab community, which has seriously been hurt over the last several years. They had all read the Seven Habits book, so they allowed me on Sunday night to teach Indian talking stick communication. This is an example of an Indian talking stick. The original one that was given to me is about this high, and they even put my name on the backside. They called me Bald Eagle. I'd finished training these Indian chiefs that run Indian nations in North America. That includes the First Nations up in Canada. The Iroquois Federation taught Indian talking stick communication to the founding fathers of our country, which I believe powerfully impacted what took place in the synergistic product in Philadelphia called the Constitution of the United States, which is the oldest written constitution in the world and the model for over 90% of all other constitutions. The idea is very, very simple, and it's the key to human influence with other people. Always listen first. You give the other person the talking stick, and you restate their point and their feelings around their point to their satisfaction until they feel understood. Then it is given to you, and they listen with empathy until you feel understood. And this can go around a circle, and little by little, it drains off the defensive and protective energy. Why? What air is to the body to feel understood is to the heart. You're not worried about air now because you have it. As soon as a person feels deeply understood, they're not worried and over-anxious about their efforts to become understood. They become open to influence. And as people influence each other little by little, the creative energy is unleashed, and they come up with solutions that no one would have imagined initially. Our meetings went from Sunday night until Tuesday at 5 o'clock, the first time. No one spoke without the Indian talking stick. Madeleine Albright, who was one of the participants, who was the Secretary of State with President Clinton, said, "I have never seen anything like this. People of such profound differences becoming so creative and essentially moving away from the demands of their constituency and from a win-lose or a lose-win approach to life, and to create a synergistic result." We came up with four goals, transcendent goals, and every person there agreed to work on one or two of those goals and to be accountable to every other person, not to just a boss or the so-called formal leader, but to everyone. This has now gone on for 2 years. We're presenting our paper in Washington, D.C. this fall. We want to influence the political candidates at the local, the regional, the state, and the national levels around the importance of learning Indian talking stick communication in resolving the central issues of life. That is a principle. So remember, if you want to have influence with others, always work within their frame of reference. Always make their point for them first. This takes real effort. It also takes a great deal of security from within. If your security comes from without, you become very vulnerable inside, and to listen in the way I just described makes you at risk and threatened, and the tendency will be to pretend to listen or to listen with the intent to reply, not with the intent to really understand, and then to be understood, and then to create new options, new alternatives that are better than what anyone had proposed initially. Try it. Try it in your work with each other, your friends. Try it in associations. Try it with the faculty. Always make their point first. to their satisfaction, and you'll begin to see what kind of influence you begin to develop. Influence is really what moral authority is about. It's leadership. And eventually you'll be caught into the spirit of service. I admire the commitment of this great university to community service. And you could become a catalyst. You could become a change catalyst in helping to bring about a principle-centered community by bringing leaders together who discuss with each other their value system until mores and norms begin to develop inside the wider culture that we live in this community in Bozeman, and then also taking it to other communities. We live by principles. I'm working on a number of different projects regarding this fundamental issue, including how a university can become a trim-tabbing organization to an entire community. A trim tab is the small rudder that turns the big rudder that turns an entire ship. How we can reduce crime significantly. 80 to 90% crime can go down through prevention, a prevention paradigm, and also a paradigm of partnering, where positive tickets, more positive tickets by far are given than negative tickets, so that the police have a partner with the parents, with the neighborhoods, and it's cool to be good rather than to be lawless and to be duplicitous behind people's back by talking about them. See, the moment I do that, you'll know that when there's strain or pressure on our relationship, I would do the same thing towards you. That's why these principles become so powerful. They're natural laws. They really are. It's the essence of happy marriages. It's the essence of happy families. And family is the most important organization. Constantly nurture your family relationship. Even though you may not see them all the time, you can write them, you can text them, you can become a transition figure in your own family and stopping, say, bad practices or bad traditions going from one generation to another. Because you are the creative force of your own life. You are not a product of your past. You're a product of your choices to your past. You're a product of your ability to use self-awareness, imagination, conscience, and independent will, and the synergistic use of all four of those human gifts enable you to become a change catalyst and to become a great contributor in life. And that's what you will be. See yourself in that way. Win the private victory early in the day. The greatest battles of life are fought out every day in the silent chambers of your own soul. Win it privately. Visualize. See yourself living by principles under difficult and compromising situations. And little by little, the tendency to compare yourself with others will diminish. And you'll become a product of your integrity and the principles of service, empathy, synergy, and the law of the harvest. Hard work. Consistent hard work will pay such dividends. Take tough classes. Pay the price. Do not get into the habit of cramming and trying to get by in order to get top grades without really paying a price. I admire and appreciate this tremendous opportunity that you have to begin this university experience. I congratulate you on your being here. I close in the language of the French philosopher Teilhard Chardin, who said, "We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Thank you so much. I appreciate you and pray God's blessings upon all of you and upon your family and all your endeavors here at the university.
Let's give another thank you to Dr. Covey for challenging us to lead more principle-centered lives.
That was Stephen R. Covey on living a principled-centered life. And it was recorded in 2008. Dr. Stephen Covey is the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I personally found this talk very inspiring because it really shows that he was not just a motivational speaker and author, but he had a real mission that he was endeavoring to bring about in the world. And we each have that. We each have that. And I believe that this talk is a way of finding resolution and peace within our lives and within our relationships, and can allow us to move forward in the world in a way that is in attunement with the deepest part of our beings. So I encourage you to find out more about Dr. Stephen Covey. You might want to check out his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. There's a lot of audio available. And if you go at the end of the show to the website, prn.fm, you can look up the Heart of Mind radio page, and you'll see some links there where you can find more inspirational material. You'll also find a way to make contact with myself, Catherine Davis, host of this program, Heart of Mind Radio. And you will have my phone number, which is 347-480-1694, or you can connect through email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And we are also gearing up to restart our spiritual support group, and this is a monthly meeting where a number of listeners and others who've been invited and found out about this group, and we meet and we talk about, you know, a more personal self-discovery and journey in our spiritual life, which has a direct impact on our physical life. If you want more information about that, you can send an email, or if you go to my page, the Heart of Mind radio page on prn.fm, you'll find a link to our Facebook group for the Heart of Mind support group, as well as a link to a monthly newsletter where you'll be getting more information about this. So this is an opportunity for us all to connect, interconnect, and become part of this community that I have been working on building, because I love doing radio, but there's also, I feel called to build community that we could all have an impact on our lives through mutual support, caring, and development. So please do connect with us in that way. As well, if you want to find out more about energy healing practice that I have in Brooklyn, you can also call that number, 347-480-1694. I want you to stay tuned for more great programming here at the Progressive Radio Network, and thank you for joining me today. Stay tuned and tune in again.
just 3 digits, but I'm far from home. Falling, nobody cares. I twist 3 keys and I'm all alone. There's a party upstairs. It's not the first time I've been lied to. Daughters and the liquid sun disappear.